Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason, and Jason's dryer.
I'm doing laundry.
Yeah, I can hear it. It sounds like you're being assaulted by a very distant machine gunner.
Yeah, that's right. They haven't hit me yet.
Stay down.
Again, verisimilitude is what we're going for in this podcast, and I thought about pausing the load of sheets that are in the washing machine spinning right now, and then I thought, no, you know what? It's the secret podcast. People want, they're dying for this stuff.
The sheets got to get washed, man.
Although, this does allow me to very clearly answer the question, do I have a mute button on my microphone?
Oh, yes. Soothing.
Yes, I do.
Well, I was a little worried on my end because, so I've got this, there's a bug on my iMac. I don't know what caused this. This started happening a couple weeks ago.
We should swap that.
I tried, but it seems nice.
Okay.
Where the Bluetooth just dies every once in a while. Several times a day. And so I'll just get the overlay will pop up on the screen telling me that my keyboard and trackpad have been disconnected at the same time. And then it'll pop it like 10 seconds later, they'll reconnect. But you can't do anything when they disconnect other than just sit there, pound on the keys a little bit and hope that they come back. So my worry is that at some point this is really going to bite me in the ass when it's like, you know, somebody calling me on Skype and I can't accept the call because I have no input methods.
And I need to have a mouse plugged in, like just somewhere, USB mouse plugged in just in case you need to click on something.
You know, this may be the straw that breaks the camel's back and makes me buy a new computer, but I don't want to buy a new iMac until there are, you know, maybe some announcements about that later this year. So I want to kind of stretch this for another, I don't know, 4 months or so.
The MagSafe on my plug on my wife's MacBook charger seems to have died.
Uh-huh.
And I was just investigating, and it looks like one of the pins is not coming out above the level of the charger anymore.
They retract slightly, right? Like they have springs or something?
They're spring-loaded, and generally they stay above the base level. Look, my laundry's done. Now there's a little beeping song happening. I hope everybody enjoys this. So they're spring-loaded, and there's like, I think, five. Two big ones and three little ones. And one of the little ones is like, it's there and I can actually take like a pin and push it up and down, but it doesn't come all the way up out of its little shell, which I believe, I mean, it could mean that it's just broken or the top broke off of it. It could also mean there's something down in there that's blocking it. So I have one more thing I'm going to try, but I tried to clean it out in a bunch of different ways. And I have one more thing I'm going to try, which is to find some like blue tack or gum, quite frankly, would also do it. Something gooey, but solid that I've seen people recommend that you actually stick it down in there and then pull it back out. And it like brings junk with it when it comes back out. I'm skeptical. I think maybe it's just dead and I'm going to have to buy another one. Of a technology that's going away, but the fact is, my wife's laptop needs to be plugged in. I do have one other charger because it also is for my MacBook Air, but I'm probably going to have to buy another charger. So that was a bummer today. That was a thing that happened.
Yeah, technology,
old tech.
Why is it break?
And you want to put it off, but you know the fact is, even if I were to get a new laptop, the laptop that I've got would be handed down to someone, and they would need a plug for it. So,
I'm never sure what to do with my iMac when I eventually replace it, because though it's functional, it's quirky. It's got its quirks, and it's like, and I can't. I've passed the point where I feel like it's a 6-year-old machine too. So there aren't a lot of places that really want that. Even some of the places where you can donate computers, a lot of times they don't want machines that are that old.
Yeah, it's at some point it just becomes recycling.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that's what I might have to end up doing with it, is just take it in to have it recycled, because I'm not sure that there's like a place that could use it to good effect. Maybe there is, I don't know, but I've definitely felt like there are times I've tried to get rid of older technology and nobody wants it because it's too old.
Yeah, my 2009 whatever iMac that's here probably is not going to get it used again. It's, you know, and it's old. It still could be usable, but my guess is that it's not usable enough for somebody to actually want it. But I don't know. I have that thought too of, It's got a nice screen too. That's the thing about it. Mm-hmm. If I had a need for a screen somewhere, I could use it. But you know, it's not a Retina screen or anything. But it's like a big screen. I don't think it's a 27. I think it's like the 24,
21,
23. No, well, I think it was earlier than that when they had a larger sky size. But maybe not.
I mean, mine's at 21.5 and it's fine.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
21.5. I don't know. I don't really have the space in my house to like maintain old. I have one Power Mac G3 sitting there, and I'm not like that is basically the extent of my old computers that are sitting around.
I agree. And the screen is so huge. It's like, I don't know. I mean, if I had, if I had a use for it, but I don't. And I think it's too old to have, they added a feature, which is not in the Retina iMacs, at least not yet. They added that feature where you could use an iMac as an external display.
Yep.
And it's too old for that. So
I
can't do that.
Mine
either.
Does it either.
Yeah. So yeah. I couldn't even like use it as a monitor for my server or something like that. I can't even in target display mode. So, oh, well. So, yeah, at some point, I will either, investigate whether somebody wants to basically take it and use it as is, which is, I've upgraded it. It's got max RAM, and it's got an SSD in it. So it's functional, but it's just, it's an old computer.
Yeah,
and,
same here. Mine has an SSD, which I'm constantly running out of space on.
Sure.
And it's got, I added more RAM to it last year in lieu of replacing it. And it has an i7 in it too, I believe. So it's not a slouch, but I do notice there are things I do on this that are weirdly enough, there are definitely things I do on this that are faster on my MacBook Air, which is 3 years newer than it. So yeah. Even though that one, I mean, seems like it should be less powerful, but 3 years makes a whole lot of difference in computing
really
technology.
Does.
There you go. But I think I have to replace the desktop this year. It's just, just for stuff that I do every, like podcasting is the thing where I have the biggest sort of, files to move around, process needs, mm-hmm. CPU power, that kind of stuff. And it's definitely sluggish on doing a lot of those tasks. So, yep, might be time.
Yeah, it's tough to decide when to make a change. Speaking of time, I have a little time tidbit for you, Dan.
Okay, sure.
I believe, according to Amazon, I am going to receive my copy, my paperback copy of your novel today.
Okay.
2,532 days ago, you sent me an email asking me to beta read your novel manuscript. 6.93 years.
I did that exact same math right now. 6.9 years.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow. Almost. Oh, so very close to 7 years.
June 5th, 2010. You sent me an email.
Okay. Okay.
And I'll probably have to reprise this for the Incomparable because we're going to do an Incomparable special about your book, just you and me talking about it. But you have expressed at some point, perhaps in a moment of foolhardy jest, interest in reading my latest novel. Perhaps you concluded that this day would never come, that I would be mired throughout the years in that eternal toil that we so often see documented on the screen. Alas, if that was your wager, you have lost, I'm afraid. Yep.
This is good stuff. That should be in a book somewhere.
Yeah. I've reached what I like to call the beta stage of the book, which has a title that it is not The Caledonian Gambit.
That was a long ago title to a reference to a thing that gradually got weeded out of the book. We can talk about that on the full show.
That's right.
I was just curious to look up because you mentioned, let's see, so that would have been May 2000, or it's probably what, June 2010,
June,
you said?
June 5th, 2010.
So I'm just going to point out, because I'm amused by this, that that August 2010 was the start of The Incomparable. So,
yes.
Like this, that book well predates The Incomparable,
which has been on forever, and is it like episode 352 or something?
You have produced 352 episodes of a podcast in the time it took me to get this book out.
Yeah,
that's not nothing.
It's not nothing. The manuscript runs about 113,000 words.
That's pretty close to where it is, I think.
I was gonna ask.
Not the same words. The percentage of words that are the same is a really good question. It's probably better than 50%, but it's probably not much higher than that.
And then in March 11, you sent me rewritten chapters of the beginning of the book.
Mm-hmm. Which I think are rewritten chapters, some of which are not actually in the current book.
Yeah, I think one of those chapters is not in the book for sure. Because I think you added basically like a different viewpoint prologue, and then that got yanked. But again, we'll go into detail. Yeah, people who are interested in novel stuff, we'll go into detail in that special incomparable.
There will be episode. Interesting things. There will be secrets. There will be secrets never discussed elsewhere.
Secrets will be revealed. But anyway, I just had that moment of I had to look it up because today is the culmination. It's not the release day officially, but if I get the book today from Amazon, because Amazon doesn't care about release dates apparently.
Almost
7 years. Just a couple weeks short of 7 years.
And it must have taken me a couple of years. I try to look up every once in a while and try to figure out exactly when I started writing that, but I think it was easily 2 to 3 years before that.
Oh, sure.
So, yeah.
And there's not the first novel of yours that I read.
No. In fact, I was thinking back to some of the earlier ones today because I'm starting to think about stripping them for parts and using them for something new because... I as I commented, somebody asked me for some writing advice recently, or at least publishing advice. And like, dude, my first book's not even out yet. I'm not sure I'm the person you want to turn to, but I'll tell you what I know. And I mentioned this was not my first book. It was my fourth, and a couple other aborted ones in there that never made it to fruition. But the first one that I wrote actually got rejected by my current agent probably about 13 or 14 years ago, and should have been because it wasn't that good, but you know, that's why you stick with it.
Yeah, you should strip that for parts. There's some interesting stuff in those in those books. I have another book of yours that I need to read too, so
yeah, that's true.
I gotta get on that.
And then I gotta start writing something new because that one I finished last year and I haven't written anything new since then, so I gotta kind of buckle down.
Yeah, you gotta get on it.
Write novels, it's hard. It takes a long time, man. Like I wish I were better at short stories because I've written a couple here and there, but It is not my milieu.
Yeah. So I will, I'm going to download. In fact, I'm downloading your book right now.
Oh boy. This
from
is
a
what
pirate,
you...
from a piracy site. No,
I went to look today to see if there were, every once in a while one pops up that claims to be on a piracy site, but I'm despite the fact that I have some experience with those kinds of sites, I am super wary about downloading anything that purports to be my book because I feel like, oh, that's just asking for it at that point.
All right. I'm sending, there it is. Your draft is now, in my Kindle library. So
cool. All right. There we go.
Done and done. Yeah, so how was Clockwise this week?
Clockwise this week was great. It's nice that Micah has been on before several times, so he knows how the show works.
That's good.
Yeah. So we had only one hiccup, which was at the end when he didn't realize that he was supposed to thank one of the guests. So I thanked Joe Rosenstiel, who was our first guest, for a debut appearance, and Micah was supposed to thank Allison Sheridan or other guests, and there was kind of one of those beats, and then he realized, oh no, that's supposed to be me, isn't it? But we snipped that, fixed it, and like, hey, that's like 28 minutes into the show, and that was the only hiccup that we had.
That's good. You and I figured that out, and it only took us like 140 episodes to get that down. So,
well, okay, I don't know if you listened to this week's episode, but what was off-putting or weird to me was that when the end of the show rolls around, because I wasn't sure, like we hadn't really discussed it beforehand, but now I am saying, watch what you say.
Watch what you say.
And, I was like, oh no, what am I going to do? Am I going to make Micah say this? Because he's not going to necessarily pick up the cue because, you know, he just might not know what to do. But he knew exactly what to do as soon as I said that. And he was really happy too afterwards. I cut it, but at the end he just says, I've been waiting to say that. So I guess I've graduated to that being my line now, which is, it's weird for me because I feel like we were pretty consistent about that all the way through, except for the episodes that one of us did, you know, without the other one.
Right. Right.
But yeah, it's going to take some getting used to, and we're going to, I mean, there'll be probably some format changes, you know, some slight changes in the way that things work. Cause that's how it goes with a new co-host, but
absolutely.
The format is also so tight and so strict in some ways that there's not a lot of room for experimentation with that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think there will be, it'll be a slightly different vibe, but I think it will be close enough to the original, you know, it's like a reboot.
Yeah, no, it's all good. That it happens. Things evolve. I'm glad that it's continuing.
Yeah, but
that's good. I'm getting ready to do download letter today.
That's
so that'll
right.
be my that's my new job.
It's a different work. It's a different sort of job too.
Well, yes, it's different, and it requires a different kind of prep work. And also, I'm sure that there's a whole bunch of it that I'm going to internalize eventually. But like I did with Clockwise, you do 180 some odd episodes and you internalize a lot of, you know, you do this, then you do this, then you do this. And that's a new show. So I haven't internalized anything yet. We're still figuring it out. And so there's extra up early on a show's run. There's a lot of extra effort mm-hmm. that you have to put in, and then you learn.
You find your groove.
Exactly. So we'll get there.
This is only episode 3, right?
Episode 3, yeah, right. So we're still trying to figure
it out. I mean, George Lucas didn't even have Star Wars figured out after 3 episodes, depending on which order you go in.
Yeah, sure. Good to hear that Apple acquired BB Edit. Nope. Nope, that's wrong.
A little scary.
It acquired Bedit.
Which, in and of itself, I feel like has certain challenges as a name. But sure.
Well, they're from Finland.
Yeah, I understand. It's cool.
It's like a strap thing that goes under your sheet.
Yeah, I guess it like must have some sort of pressure sensors in it or something that it can tell when you're like rolling around or when you haven't moved. Because like sleep tracking's nothing new. There's lots of stuff that purports to do that, including I think doesn't David
David. Underscore David Smith has,
yes, underscore David Smith has a sleep tracker.
Yeah.
And I think that's hampered to a certain degree by just what the watch lets you do. But also sleep tracking, and I've got a piece coming on Macworld on this tomorrow, probably, about the health pushes that Apple's been doing. But sleep tracking is rumored to be one of the features of watchOS 4, I believe.
Right.
Although that's weird because, as people have pointed out, if you're using your watch to track your sleep all night, you're not charging your watch probably. So
I think the argument is that a Series 2 watch could be charged in the morning before you, like when you take your shower, and that would be enough to get through the day.
It also might not have to be in like, I mean, you could in theory put it in like airplane mode or something, because possibly a lot of that stuff could be done on the device and then transmitted when you reconnect them. So that's a possibility, or low power mode even. I don't know, but yeah, I just don't want to wear a watch when I'm sleeping. I find it uncomfortable. So maybe if Apple, I don't know if Apple will continue to sell this Bedit device or if they just want the people and the data and the know-how.
Maybe so.
If they do,
I don't know. It's an interesting idea to have a little, it's not a wearable, right? It's a sleepable.
Right, sleep.
But it's an interesting idea. Yeah, it may be that their expertise in this and applying it to the watch instead might be the way to do it. Because obviously that's one direction the watch should go as its battery life improves, whether the Series 2 can do it or not.
And I'm intrigued by the way that these metrics can play in with each other. For example, in thinking about sort of Apple's health push, you know, the idea that if you're tracking your sleep and you're tracking your activity, you know, correlating these data, you know, could be interesting. Be like, oh, you didn't, you know, get enough exercise today and you didn't sleep well as a result, right? Like being able to analyze patterns, you know, not just from one data stream, but from multiple data streams and sort of fold them together and help figuring out like you know, it's one thing to say you haven't slept well. And so as a result, maybe you're not super awake today, right? Like, oh, that's why I'm not really functioning well today. I'm not super awake. But then being able to turn that around and turn that into like actionable material, like, oh, I didn't sleep well because I didn't, you know, do my workout yesterday. Or, you know, later on, if you can fold in other additional stuff, like, oh, I didn't sleep well because I didn't drink enough water or whatever, right? Like finding ways to fold all that information together and present a more cohesive picture is really interesting.
And that's clearly where Apple wants to go with the health stuff, right? Right. Apple wants to be able to have you wear various devices and
30 different sensors on your body.
Well, I mean, I was thinking about how that there's probably value at some point in data that it could collect in your ears from the AirPods. Like, even if it's just an alternate pulse measurement, so that it's more accurate or something like that. I mean, they're you know, different things that you could do. Optional sensors. The Beta actually is a good example of something that's sort of an optional sensor, that if you really want precise sleep activity tracking, something like the Beta is a good idea, because it's going to be able to be very specific. And if you need to do blood, glucose, that maybe there's a custom monitor for that. That's better than something that's in an all-purpose device like an Apple Watch. But yeah, I think they want to assemble all that data and then have apps. This is definitely health. I mean, Apple thinks this is a huge area of potential for them.
Yeah, and sort of the argument I'm going into in this piece is the idea that health is sort of the next killer app for them in some ways. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's what's fascinating about it. And I found an article I had written, I don't know, 3 years ago or something, talking about the health app before it was released, when it was still rumored to be called HealthBook, and kind of making the argument that that's the first real sort of initiative or app that we've seen come out of Tim Cook's Apple. Because famously, you know, Steve Jobs was really, really, you know, passionate about music. And that's why we got so many products related to music and why Apple did some of its best work in that arena. And I think Tim Cook cares about health and fitness with a similar sort of passion. And so, you know, he's one man and that's not like the entirety of the company, but he also steers that company and he can sort of direct it in those initiatives. And I think Jobs was also more interested in health towards the end of his life, especially because of the health concerns he was dealing with. But playing us all together, I think, has, you know, really makes a convincing argument that Apple's investment in health is going to be big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Jobs got to witness the health system and all the issues with it, and I think it sparked some thoughts in him, for sure.
Right, and Cook, by all accounts, is kind of a fitness and health nut.
Exactly.
And so that plays right into the sort of the sweet spot, which is great when you can find something that, and, you know, this is what Apple is at its best, when it finds something that it really cares about and can address in some way. And so, yeah, that's why we have these, you know, rumors about doing glucose monitoring and sleep tracking and all this stuff. And I think the watch is interesting too, because in that way it's played out, it's kind of become a Trojan horse. I can think of so many people I know who are not really super engaged with their, you know, with fitness or health, but, you know, since getting an Apple Watch have been like, oh, I try to close my rings every day, right? Like, it's kind of, I don't want to say strictly like by gamifying it, but it's provided a challenge opportunity. And because so many people of our nerdy persuasion are people who like to challenge themselves about certain things, I think it works great as that Trojan horse for like getting people invested in something that is good for them. So it's very clever on that part. And I think we'd agree that health and fitness is probably one of the best applications of the Apple Watch.
Yeah. I don't know what else is going on. You and I both ended up writing pieces related to Apple's laptop product line.
Mm. Yeah.
That was your Macworld column last week and mine this week. I tried to take it from a kind of a close read of the surface, which I think, you know, I've talked about on a few podcasts, because I think the funny thing about the Surface laptop is that it shows the power of the teaser product that's low spec'd but low priced. Mm-hmm. Because it's got 4 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, right.
Like, Apple doesn't make that product, and the MacBook and the Surface laptop actually cost the same with the same specs. So it's interesting. It shows you the power of coming up with something that's underpowered, underspec'd, and therefore lets you hit a price, even if you wouldn't recommend. I mean, the challenge is some people are going to use it at that. So it's like, if it's an awful experience at $999 at 4 gigs of RAM, then maybe you need to not make that product. And Apple does that a lot. Apple also does it where, you know, that way they're basically saying, we're not going to make a product that cheap. We're going to make you pay. But once you hit that price, it's not that different than what you're paying for Microsoft. It's a little different because it's the M5 instead of the i5 processor. But I would argue, I guess my piece in Macworld was really that Apple stuff matches up pretty well with Microsoft on this. despite I think some of the stories that suggest that that Microsoft is hitting Apple where it lives. And the only criticism that I've got of what's in Apple's line now, other than the fact that they don't have a real story at $999, it's a 2-year-old MacBook Air. Mm-hmm. That at the other parts of the line, both the 13-inch no touch bar MacBook Pro and the MacBook, the only thing I would say is that MacBook needs a refresh. Right? It's a little long in the tooth now. It's been more than a year since it was updated. But other than that, you know, I think some of this is Microsoft getting that low starter price, the $999, where Apple is incapable or unwilling to go down there with a Retina laptop, so they just keep the MacBook Air down there. And I think it's maybe Apple's, it's certainly questionable, arguable decision to roll that 13-inch no-touch bar laptop into the MacBook Pro line, where it gets kind of lost, because it really is a lot like the MacBook Air in specs, if not in price tag. Like, it's within like 0.2 pounds of the MacBook Air. It's not as light as the MacBook Air, but it's in the ballpark. It's just above 3 pounds.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. It's one of those things that I think maybe our perception of Apple's laptop line is, compared to what Microsoft is doing, is not, if you look a little closer, it's not quite right.
Right. Yeah. It's an interesting move for Microsoft to, I wonder about the positioning of this product, because it seemed like they pushed really hard on it being sort of an education product when they announced it, in terms of like the event around it. There was a lot of stuff about education. There's also like that interesting sort of luxury angle with the ones with like the covering, the fabric cover. I don't know. Do they all have that? The fabric?
Yeah.
The high-end fabric
covering? Yeah,
I'm super curious to see how that holds up, because that seems like a not great idea. But then again, there's plenty of plastic laptops that have shown their wear after a while. So it may not be that different in that regard. Microsoft's hardware design has always been really interesting, because I think that they don't focus quite as much on, you know, they don't try like Apple does to sort of make things fit within a particular vocabulary of materials, it feels like. They do have some sort of design riffs that they stay on. I'm thinking of like what they've done with their like mice over the years. They have a very distinct look for some of those. But like, you take like the Xbox and, you know, the Surface Book and compare them, and it's like, well, I mean, I guess functional and utilitarian come to mind, but they're not like, none of these things necessarily stand out as devices. So I'm curious to see, you know, sort of whether that's something they can make up for in the specs department, or whether this is, you know, just sort of a very economical play for them.
Anyway, bottom line, I want to see a new MacBook.
Sure. I agree.
that's the next step. And whether that is, ideally, that's a refreshed MacBook design, that's a sort of second generation design where they perhaps have another port.
Yep.
And the other thing about the Surface, the laptop, that blows me away is it's just got a USB 3 port.
Yep.
It's got a single port. I mean, it has a mini display port, which is not doing double duty as a Thunderbolt port, right? It's just a monitor port, and it's got one USB, and then it's got a power port. So unlike the MacBook, where you have one port for everything, okay, fair, but it's still only one USB port, which is not the best, and it's the old style,
right?
It's USB 3, well, not USB-C, so that's also a little bit weird.
That is almost exactly what the first MacBook had. I mean, it didn't have a USB 3 port, obviously, but it had that little flip-down door that had a USB port, a headphone jack, and a mini display port.
Yeah, or it was actually a micro display.
It was micro DVI or something.
It was a completely non-standard thing, and I bought the adapters for it, and adapters, of course, are useless, because they only ever worked with that one generation of laptop. Oh, yeah.
There were so many video ports over the years.
The chamber of video dongles for Apple laptops is just whew. But so it's a funny product, I would like a new MacBook that has I would like a new MacBook if they can do it where it's got Thunderbolt 3, if they can do it where it's got two ports. I think two ports more important probably than Thunderbolt 3.
Because they're dual using that one port for charging.
Yeah,
I feel like that's the thing that's a killer. I don't care if you have two USB-C ports, that's fine already. Like,
yeah.
I
don't. Yeah. Then you can charge and attach something.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's just. I understand their. You know, I understand kind of what they're going for, but I feel like sometimes when you skate towards where the puck is going out of bounds, right? Like, it's not the best place to be headed.
Yeah.
I don't know how hockey works, so someone will correct me on that. Is it really an out of bounds?
It's not like
it's going into the stands.
It's not like you're from part of the country that cares about hockey.
I went to hockey games at my college for many years. I just really didn't understand about half the rules, but it was fun to watch.
That's fair. All right, well, you're traveling somewhere tomorrow. I'm traveling somewhere tomorrow.
Oh, it's travel time.
So I guess we'll meet back here next week sometime.
All right, that seems reasonable.
Yeah. All right, and I'm looking forward to getting your book, and we'll talk about it next week.
Yeah.
We'll set some time to get together and talk about it and do that as a special incomparable bonus thingy.
Woohoo!
All right. Until then, thanks to everybody out there for being a subscriber of Six Colors. We really appreciate it. And bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.